Hi everybody, it's Mitch Katz, and thank you for joining us at this incredibly difficult time in our history, both as a health system and as a country. I want to say how proud I am of all of you for working so hard to take care of New Yorkers who've been stricken with coronavirus. I want to talk a little bit about what I've seen when I've gone around to the hospitals, some of the data from our system, some of the amazing people I've seen at work, and then we will go to questions. If you have questions, click the question box, and we'll get to as many questions as we possibly can. This has tried our system in a way nothing else ever has, and our system has responded in amazing ways. Our hospitals have tripled ICU capacity to take care of ventilated patients. Lincoln Hospital, I believe, has actually now quadrupled their capability to take care of people on ventilators. We're up to, as a system, 830 people who are being ventilated at this moment in health and hospital system. But what really matters is that people are getting off those ventilators. Israel texted me this morning that two patients at Elmhurst came off the ventilator this morning, right? And what that means is that you all are saving lives, that by putting people on ventilators for long enough to allow their immune systems to respond, you're giving them back their life. And, you know, that's a gift so amazing that only we as healthcare providers are able to do. I know that you're doing this work under incredibly difficult circumstances in every sense of the word. First, there is the fact that working at a time when so many people are losing their life to this disease makes it incredibly distressing. You're watching people who are passing, either they're coming to the hospitals and we can't resuscitate them, or despite our best efforts, in caring for people on ventilators, they are dying. And as healthcare providers, that's incredibly distressing to us when we're working hours and hours and yet people still are succumbing to the illness. You're doing this work knowing that there is risks to all of you from the virus, and we're doing our very best to make sure that everybody has the protective equipment they need in order to be safe. But we recognize that there is no perfect in this area, and that people are on the front lines putting themselves at risk to make sure that others can live. And this is in the greatest tradition of nurses, of doctors, of healthcare providers all over looking out for other people. It's incredibly difficult because people are doing jobs they haven't done before in ways they haven't done it in incredibly long hours while people are dying by their side. People have also had the added trauma of taking care of people who we work with, fellow nurses, fellow doctors, which makes it all the more difficult. But I again want to say, despite how hard it is, people are doing amazing work and stepping up in so many terrific ways. I want to particularly note that at North Central Bronx, the midwives who would normally be delivering babies are doing everything they can to care for medically complex patients suffering for coronavirus. That nurses and physicians are learning how to do the incredibly complicated work that respiratory therapists do in cases where we don't have enough respiratory therapists and we have to have somebody managing our ventilators. That medical students, interns and residents are all doing jobs that they have never before done. Our nursing staff, we had worked so hard to try to reduce nursing load with some success across health and hospitals up to this crisis. And I'm aware of nurses who are taking care of 4 and 6 ICU patients, and I know how incredibly difficult this is. I think Ted Long has done a great job of bringing in additional staff, but this crisis has been so tremendous that no matter how many staff we bring in, it never seems to be enough to keep up with the crisis. But again, we will get through it. I want to mention that I know there are pediatricians who are taking care of medicine patients. There are people who normally would work in the operating room, surgeons, anesthesiologists, who are functioning as critical care physicians. People are stretching themselves in amazing, amazing ways to be sure that we save as much life as we possibly can. I'm certain that we have enough ventilators to get through the week, and I believe beyond that, I hope that we will continue to identify supplies. Ventilators are being made, so it's kind of a race against time. We definitely have enough N95 masks that have come into the storeroom. I want to make sure that whatever the guidelines are, that people have what they need to feel comfortable. And for any of you who are working, if you don't have what you feel you need, then please ask your supervisor, ask the administrator on call for that particular shift to get you what you need. We don't want people going into situations where they feel they don't have the right protective equipment. It has been challenging. Just to explain a little bit of the challenge, our great supply team, headed by Danielle DeBerry and Paul Albertson and others, ordered all of the supplies we needed in January. They foresaw this crisis. The problem is that the commercial market collapsed. It collapsed because of all of the other countries that had coronavirus epidemics before us. So the supplies that we ordered, recognizing that we would have this crisis, all are not being delivered. And that's why we're in this difficult position that we're in. But it's not because of lack of knowledge or planning. We saw this coming. We ordered the supplies. And we can't really begrudge either the fact that they went to countries like Italy or Taiwan or Singapore or China that had people's lives at risk ahead of ours. Now we need for the entire U.S. to turn their attention to New York, which has the New York State has a third of all cases in the U.S. or in our state. And then within New York, something like two-thirds of the cases in New York State are here in New York City. I'm working very hard to figure out how to get more supplies from the federal cachet, from the state cachet, from other states that are not affected, and then we'll give them back. I've used several times the analogy that we did when we were going live on Epic, the pay forward, pay back, right? We need other states that are not yet affected by this pandemic in the way that we are to pay forward to us, and then we'll pay them back. We'll go and help them to deal with their pandemics. So again, I want to leave as much time for questions, but I want to give you from my heart how my gratitude, my appreciation, which I know is felt by families all over, by first responders. Someone sent me a clip of the firefighters giving a siren applause to Jacoby Hospital for the lives that they have saved. I hear, and I hope you hear, at 7 p.m. every night, the people of New York applauding for all of you. It is an amazing testament, the work that you're doing, and I'm so very grateful. Thank you.
So Mitch, we have one question. The question is, when will primary care nurse practitioners and RNs be redeployed, and to where will this redeployment be?
So I think it's already happens, right? In the first phase, we went to, in our primary care areas, changing all the visits to be phone visits so as not to put our patients at risk or our providers at risk. We're figuring out in every case where best to deploy our staff. We'll keep in primary care enough staff to maintain, especially medicine refills, answer questions. I know in my own practice, several of my patients have called me or contacted me and likely have coronavirus, and for me to be able to talk them through it keeps them away from the hospital by telling them that, you know, if they're not short of breath, they should stay home, they should drink a lot of fluids, they should rest. But we are deploying all of the primary care staff in ways that, we can help them. We have to recognize that different people have different skill sets. People who have not worked in a hospital for 20 or 25 years may not be able to function as a bedside person on their own, but may be able to buddy with an experienced nurse or doctor to extend us. So the goal is to deploy everybody. Everybody is needed. There's a job for everyone. And we're doing a lot to make that happen.
Okay, we have another question. And the question is, can you address why part-time health and hospitals doctors are being asked to work at other health and hospitals facilities and in other departments, and if they're being compensated?
So we have the ability to compensate anyone who is working. We're not, we can be able to pay sessional rates for doctors. We're able to pay for nurses. Right now, money is not our issue. My instructions to all of my staff is spend whatever money you need in order to deal with this pandemic. When you're facing life and death is not the time to be worried about dollars. The issues are, you know, identifying enough staff, right? There are only so many doctors, only so many nurses, only so many respiratory therapists. Those are the areas most critically felt. Having ICU nurses, having physicians with critical care experience, with ventilator experience, while we appreciate everybody and we have a job for everyone, not every nurse can manage a ventilated patient who is paralyzed and on multiple pressors to maintain their blood pressure as well as dialysis, right? And that is a real skill, and thank God we have people who can do it. But of course, we don't have enough people to do it to have gone to quadruple an ICU at Lincoln. Of course, they can't quadruple the number of ICU nurses or the number of critical care physicians, but they can teach. We've had offers. Anne Bovier, a longtime Bellevue nurse, she sent me an email saying she wanted to return to Bellevue to teach critical care to nurses. So I think, again, that the goal is we have to figure out how to put everybody to use to get ourselves through this crisis.
Okay, the next question is on PPE equipment. PPE shortage is being felt at all levels, from MDs to housekeeping. When do you anticipate the health system will have enough supply of PPE for all employees?
I have spent more time on PPE than any other topic in the last, 10 days. And it's a mixed picture. Right now, we have enough N95 masks. People should use them as they need them. We do not have as many gowns. No, excuse me. We do. We at Health and Hospitals, we're okay on gowns. We are also okay on gloves at the time. So right now, our PPE situation, thanks to the hard work of the purchasing group, is pretty good. But information flows slowly, and the month supply still assumes that we're doing our best to conserve. And let me spend a few minutes on that, because I know it's been very confusing. If you're wearing a N95 mask, and that mask does not get wet or soiled, it's not a bad thing to keep using it. You're not putting yourself at risk, you're not putting anyone else at risk. That's a somewhat confusing message, because there was a day just a month or two ago that one would go in to a COVID-19 patient with an N95 mask, and then as leaving the room, take it off, throw it away, because we weren't short, but now we're short. And so we have to find ways. So the way I think of it is, we have enough PPE under a crisis scenario. We don't have enough so that we can use it the way we once did, but we do have enough so that if we want people to keep using it, so long as it's not wet or soiled, and if you feel like it's not protecting you, then ask for another one, please. I do like the strategy of putting a surgical mask over the N95. I think that's a smart strategy. It gives double protection and preserves the N95 more, because it makes it less likely that it's going to splatter. I think you'll see in this week more supplies. We are aware, and it has been a challenge, and it's understandable that people are frightened. So we think that at times people have hidden a little stash for themselves. While that's 100% understandable, it makes it harder for us to put out large amounts of supplies in any one place. I hope that people see relief in this coming week.
Okay, we have another question. Is there any discussion about allowing staff that provide telemental help to do so from home?
So this has all been challenging. Who should work from home? Who should come to work physically? This is not an easy question, right? I mean, broadly, the healthcare workers are one of the groups that are allowed out of their house to go to work. That being said, if people are not needed in the workplace, we do want them to stay at home. However, figuring that out in a dynamic model, for example, people who are doing televisits, may this week we may have to say, okay, we think doing televisits is great, but we need you to function as a social worker to get patients discharged more rapidly from our acute care hospital. So that's why I can't make blanket decisions about classes of people. Every facility has to figure out whether or not. I understand that if your job is televisits, it seems like an obvious thing. Well, I should be able to do televisits at home. But what if televisits right now is not the most useful thing for you to be doing? Then it becomes a more complicated question. To the extent that we've been able day by day to handle the crisis and still maintain televisits, I think that's a great thing. I think what the facility directors are struggling with is figuring out on each day, can I maintain this? Or do I need for people to be reallocated to other areas of the hospital where their job would require being in person?
Okay, the next question is there any relationship between COVID-19 and the 5G radiation scare that's being portrayed in the media? If so, how is it being handled, as the symptoms seem similar?
I'm afraid I don't know about the 5G scare. I haven't seen that, so I can't comment. I'll happily look into it.
Okay. We have another question.
While we're waiting on the next question, I do want to mention a couple of things about the value of hope. I talked about people who have come off the ventilator. We have seen in the last few days, and you've probably noticed it especially if you're at Elmhurst or Queens, that while we continue to have more patients intubated each day than the day before, we're not having the skyrocket increases that we saw earlier. So there, again, every day is harder than the day before, because every day has more people on ventilators and the hospital's more crowded. So I'm not trying to suggest anything's getting easier. But the fact that the increases are tamping down suggests that we may be at the precipice of a leveling off. And that gives me a great deal of hope for us.
We have another question on PPE. You may have touched on this, but I'll ask it again. If PPEs are reserved for doctors and nurses, what provisions are being done or allowed for persons that are being reallocated to other hospital facilities?
So the goal is that every person who is in the hospital should have the appropriate level of PPE for what they are doing. Right, and obviously, you know, the people greatest at risk and who need the most protective equipment are nurses and respiratory therapists who are doing suctioning of ventilated patients in the ICU. That is one of the greatest risk procedures. People who are, say, working security in the hospital also should have protective equipment, but their protective equipment doesn't need to be the same as that nurse. So trying to make sure that everybody has the correct equipment, again, in a environment where things keep changing, both because we learn new things about the virus and because of recommendations that are coming to us from other areas.
It's a question on handling psychiatric patients. Handling psychiatric patients is very difficult as we are not ready. Is there any further plan to keep the staff safe with cooperation from med ERs?
Well, in general, I really feel for people who have mental illness at this moment. Right, the people with mental illness struggle with getting through a day when a day seems like a normal thing. And the days that we've experienced recently are anything but normal. People are isolated, there is tremendous fear. So we want to do everything we can to try to support people with mental illness and the providers who are taking care of them. But this is in the context where we know if we do not get people on a ventilator in time, somebody's going to die. And trying to weigh those two things together is by no means easy. We have to deploy most of our staff to keeping people alive. This is likely to be a 4 to 6 week crisis. And our failure to rise means people dying. If we are able to get through this crisis, meaning that we've given everybody their best shot to live, then we will be in a position to deal with some of the other issues. Meanwhile, we're trying to reserve enough bandwidth to care, and it's not just the psychiatric patients. There are still people having accidents. There are still people having babies, happily. There are still women who may be at risk for domestic violence because everybody is at home, and these people are all afraid of coming to the hospitals because they know that we're caring for so many people with coronavirus. We have to find enough bandwidth to meet their needs while still being able to get everybody who has to emergently be put on a ventilator on a ventilator.
Okay, we have time for two last questions. This one is, again, on the topic of working from home. What's the plan for enabling radiologists to work from home and possibly cross over from other facilities besides their primary hospital?
So I know David Shee is hard at work at this. I had hoped that this was going to be a little bit easier. I mean, this was one of the issues we tried to resolve a few weeks ago. That the PAC system is not so easy to turn into everybody's home system. So I think, you know, the good part is everybody, as I understand it, can read x-rays at home in the sense that once they're on the electronic health record. But the PAC system is separate, and my understanding is it's not a simple matter to get the PAC system in everybody's home. But I know David Shee is hard at work at that.
Can the health system provide hotel rooms and meals for ER doctors, nurses, and EMS techs to help them continue the work and also prevent virus from spreading to their families and other patients?
Well, I'm so glad you reminded me. So we are doing this, and this week we're going to markedly expand it. We've gotten several very generous donations. When a benefactor called me yesterday and said, you know, I want to help, what should I do? I said, take care of my healthcare workers. That's my number one priority, take care of them. And so we got a $2 million donation for food and any comfort measures. We already have hotel rooms available for people who cannot go home or don't feel safe to go home or feel like they would put their families at risk. I know in many places we are offering showers and scrubs to people who want to change their clothing before they return home. So ask at your facilities how to tap into that, and hopefully you'll see the food coming quickly. How much time do I have?
I think we have one room for one
question. Let's do that question, and then I want to just finish up with a moment.
The question is, are employees who are positive for COVID-19 mandated to report to work?
Okay, so if you are COVID-19, we want you to stay home for 7 days, a minimum of 7 days from the time of diagnosis, plus 3 days without fever. So that assumes at the end of the 7 days, of course, that you're not, you know, still coughing or sick. We do not expect people to come when they are sick. But what we hope is the people who have gotten over COVID, we hope will feel particularly motivated to help others to get over COVID. And while there's no proof, we think it's highly likely that people who have gotten over COVID will not get COVID again anytime soon. While it's coronavirus immunity from other coronaviruses is not necessarily lifelong, it usually does last in the short term. And so our hope is that people who've gotten over COVID, you know, will want to come back and really beat down this virus, knowing that they're likely at lower risk than their colleagues who are COVID negative. We at time? Okay, well, again, thank you so much for all the work you're doing. It's greatly, greatly appreciated.
Thank you.